Good morning, everybody, and welcome to the Board of Public Works. Today is April 7th, 2010, in the great state of Maryland, on a beautiful day. And I'd like to ask the Comptroller or the Treasurer if they have any opening thoughts, comments as we begin business here.
Governor, only that it's a blessing to be here on this beautiful day. And I hope we all appreciate it as we encounter some very difficult and increasingly difficult problems facing our fiscal state to be appreciated as a beauty of our fiscal state.
Very quiet.
Yes, I agree. It's a beautiful day, and Monday I took a couple hours off to go and partake in one of the country's great pastimes, opening day at the Nats Stadium. And I'm trying to forget about the score of the game, of course. But Governor, I did want to say also that the game was particularly enjoyable. I noticed my dad just arrived, and 50 years ago, I went to another opening day up at Fenway Park in Boston, and I have two really clear memories from that. One is just how green the outfield grass is. I don't know, those of you that go to baseball games, I don't know how they do it, but it's just incredible with the blue sky, et cetera. And the other was how happy I was because I was with my dad. And a little choked up, but he just had his 88th birthday. And but for some reason, he likes these Board of Public Works meetings. Here he is. I do want to remind folks on a less celebrated ritual that next week is the upcoming tax deadline. Last week we had a very successful online chat with Marylanders. I got questions that ran the whole gamut. I know firsthand there are plenty of Marylanders who have yet to file. If you fall into that category, please don't panic because we have 12 branch offices that are going to be open on Saturday. We prepare people's Maryland returns for free, guaranteed accurate. I'm also encouraging everyone to file electronically and use direct deposit and direct debit. We guarantee that you'll get your refund within 72 hours, which is the best in the country. And I want to thank the folks that have already used electronic filing. Last month, we received our 1 millionth electronically filed return. Nearly 80% of the returns we've received have been filed electronically, and it saves us money and obviously is good for the taxpayer. And then finally, if anyone ever wants to see what 300,000 or 400,000 paper income tax returns look like, they can come over to my office right after the 15th. We have two Super Saturdays where we bring 500 or 600 of my employees in on a volunteer basis, and they help us open this mountain of mail and get the checks deposited, Governor, for your use and the legislature's use. And that's a good experience, and it's one I'm looking forward to. And all of you that have paid, filed your taxes, thank you. For those of you who have put it off, including myself, you still have 8 days, and thank you very much for Governor letting me say something about this.
Governor, whenever the comptroller does something out, I rise to the occasion. Let me say that the Cobb family sent their taxes in last week and got a refund within 2 days. I will tell you, my husband was blown away. It was very, very impressive.
It's amazing what an election year will do.
That's funny. That's what it is.
I would like to add something on a slightly sadder, although in a way celebratory note. You know, the passing of a great Marylander last week, Saul Stern, who was a great leader in the state, in the Jewish community, in Maryland and nationally, and in his community, devoted himself for over 90 years to the service of others. A native of Biddeford, Maine, he became the mainstay of Montgomery County decades ago. And there was a service, a commemorative service last week, a celebration of his great accomplishments. It actually was on Easter Sunday, which was an interesting coincidence. And I just think it would be remiss if we let the passing of this great man go without mention in the annals of the state.
Hey, he was a great man. I had occasion to stop by his family's home on, what is today?
Wednesday.
On Monday. And saw his sons and family. He was one of those sort of strengths of the community. He was such a gentle man, but with such deep roots into the values and the beliefs that motivated and illuminated his life, that he was immovable on those values, but such a gentle and man who, you know, kind of epitomized, I think, the spirit of the state saying that, you know, you can speak gently but act boldly and strongly and according to your values. And that's the way Saul was. Great guy. Okay, what's first on our agenda? I know we have that lottery thing. Is that up in the first batch of stuff?
Toward the first batch of stuff. You can take it first, but...
It's in UDM?
No, it's in information technology.
So let's just start going through that. Okay. So first we have the secretary's agenda.
Yes, good morning, Governor. Thank you, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. We have 7 items on the secretary's agenda. We have 3 reports of emergency procurements, and we'd be happy to answer your questions. Number 5.
I do have a question about number 5.
All right. Mr. Brennan is here from Medco. This is the extension of the Crestline operating contract.
It actually is very simple.
Okay.
This
well,
is not a new issue. It's a very simple question, which is how there's legislation going through the General Assembly now. I don't know if it's passed or will pass regarding Rocky Gap. How does that impact this?
It doesn't impact us. The legislation... There's basically some clarifications that were recommended by the Lottery Commission. A lot of those were clarifying some minor points. There were 2 points in there that impacted Rocky Gap. One was to allow slots in the facility, and the other was a clarification of the adjacency of the slots facility to the existing building.
So this is basically just a one-year...
It's a one-year extension.
Potentially a bridge to the next... stage of Rocky Gap?
Yes, to the next stage.
Okay.
Thank you.
Mr. Brennan, I just have you. My concern when this came up a year ago, in the same kind of posture we're in right now, is that this is, if not a bridge to nowhere, at least it's a bridge that's not going to have a happy conclusion, because nationally, both the hospitality industry, frankly, and the gambling industry together are in the throes of a really deep recession, and unlikely that's going to change in the next foreseeable future. So I guess I have a couple of questions. How do we know we're getting a good deal here when, in effect, we're giving an extension of a contract in exchange for a line of credit? How often do we do that?
This is a very unique project in many ways. Mr. Comptroller, what we're doing is we're balancing the unknowns. And part of the unknowns is we don't know, and we don't have today, a gaming company that's willing to come in and acquire the facility. And not knowing that, we have to maintain the property as a going concern, a going operation. And that's why I need to have the management contract in place. That contract basically takes us out through April of 2012. Management company is out there today actively selling the facility. We are already booking venues that would go into that time period. So it's critical for us to keep the management company incentivized. If there is a change in operations with gaming, we will be able to adjust. We'll be able to break that contract and then allow some other type of use for the facility.
Well, I guess we've had this discussion before because we approved, I think, a $5 or $7 million state payout to the hedge fund that
$6 million. Yes, sir.
$6 million. Yes. Okay, so that's, you know, there's a lot of money. How much money is the state out, I guess, as far
from
as Rocky
the inception gets? In principle and not accrued interest, it's about $30 million.
I thought my briefing paper said it was closer to $43 million. That's the state deficit. Is that not a
that might include accrued interest, but the total principal, and some of it was grant money, which doesn't accrue interest, and then there's loans that came through, or grants, or conditional loans that came through BBED.
Okay, so I have two questions.
It's a lot of money.
Can we get some confidence that the next time this is before us, there'll be a competitive bid process for the management services? Because right now it looks as if you know, Crestline or whoever is, you know, it's not a conflict directly, but it's certainly an awkward position for the state to be taking money from the vendor that's winning the contract. And we're basically taking money from them in exchange for giving them the contract, right?
Well, we're borrowing money from them. We can't go to a commercial bank and borrow money. Nobody would lend us money for this project. So they are providing the short-term working capital lines, which enable us to fund our short-term operating needs. And we're in that period right now where we just came through the winter months. We have some cash needs. We've actually used the line of credit. We will be getting into our busy season, and that line of credit will be cleaned up. And the line of credit is required to be cleaned up by the end of December. And when we have used it, we've always cleaned it up.
Well, this you mentioned that no private bank would support this. I guess what I'm looking for is a backup plan for getting this. Some people would call it not a taxpayer boondoggle. At least my staff calls it money gap, not Rocky gap. How can we get this off the state's books? And I know you've done a heroic job to promote it and, you know, feel very strongly about it. I just think it's a loser, and it's going to be a headache for us. So can you come up with plan B? Or?
Well, I think the plan is to bring about a sale of the facility, and I expect that the SLAPS Commission will undertake an RFP within the next 2 or 3 months, and we will go through that process. I do believe if that process is not successful, we'll then have to work with the bondholders and come up with a sale without the gaming facility. But obviously, the prospect for gaming facility brings a lot more financial opportunities to make Rocky Gap successful for the long term. And to answer your question on the contract, the difficulty right now of getting any operator into the facility, for us to go out and bring a new operator, they'd want a 3 or 5 year contract. Understanding the short-term duration, it would be very difficult to get another party in there to manage the facility. And as much as I don't want to have to be in front of you next year, sir, if we haven't consummated a sale, I probably will be back. And that's not a threat.
Well, it's a beautiful facility, and, you know, I've been out there numerous times, but it's, frankly, you know, just, you know, I voted for it in the legislature, but I just, it's just not working. And I guess we can cross our fingers and hope that the down-in-the-dumps gambling industry will come in and do something with it, but I think it's much more prudent to start discussions on the assumption that that may not happen, and so we can develop some way to get this thing handed off to somebody in the private sector.
I don't disagree with what you're saying. In fact, that's what we are contemplating. But I think the process is, let's go through the first series with the Slots Commission's solicitation, and if that doesn't work, then we'll have to go to that plan. I agree with you.
I'm going to vote no, Governor, but it's not a reflection of that part of the state. It needs these kinds of projects, but this one is just not panned out. And I don't think it's going to down the road, but of course I could be wrong. Hopefully I am wrong. But
well, I'm going to, Mr. Brennan, vote to support this one more year. I was not so wild about when it started, the project, but it has started. It was certainly a great vision for Western Maryland. And I hope it will work. I hope that this bill going through will make it a more inviting site. I share some of the comptroller's skepticism, but not an unhealthy amount, I think. I really do commend you for the hard work you all are doing. It was a judgment that perhaps in retrospect was not a good one.
Appreciate your support.
Thank you. I'm going to be supporting it, and actually I think there are some signs that in fact we will be coming out on the other side of this recession, and I'm ever hopeful that it'll happen here before it happens.
I think there's a lot of people hoping we're going to come out on the other side of this recession. It's taken a while, but we'll get there one of these days.
We've gone 10 consecutive months now of home sales higher, not as high as they were in 2007, but certainly 10 consecutive months of that, and until that, what I think will be an anomalous job reporting month in February, we were actually seeing the rate of job loss slowing considerably since it's those worst months of December and 08 and January of 09. So hopefully soon here we'll pop into that positive job creation zone, net positive. And in the meantime, so many things are just going on. It's not only the hotel industry that's in the middle of a national recession, it's the nation that's in the middle of a national recession. There is no sector spared from this, but I appreciate your good work as we move Maryland forward, even in these tough times.
Let me also say that as spring comes, it is, as Peter said, a beautiful sight. Western Maryland is an outstanding part of this nation. I mean, it should be a tourist mecca. And as people are not going as away afar as they did because of the recession, seems to me that we ought to be able to keep people here. I know a lot of people love the seashore. I like the mountains. I think going to Western Maryland is a wonderful way to spend a weekend. And Rocky Gap ought to be a target site for Maryland vacationers.
I agree with you. I grew up in Ocean City, and I'm still in the mountains now.
I love the city. All right.
I'm still in the mountains. My heart is in the land. All right. What item is this? We'll do this one separately. Item 5. Let's the treasurer moves approval of item 5 on the secretary's agenda. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The comptroller votes nay. We now move on to the balance of the secretary's agenda. Any questions on the balance of the secretary's agenda?
Item 6.
Item 6.
That is. Is Ms. Buxton here or Ms. Laffer? Are you going to?
We have Megan Sines from Maryland Environmental Trust.
This is a conservation easement that the Maryland Environmental Trust is asking that the board approve an amendment to an easement that the state holds. Could you introduce yourself for the record, please?
I'm Megan Sines from Maryland Environmental Trust.
Great. Thank you. If I could just ask a question, because I'm confused at the transaction. It looks like we're giving is it Knobloch? I'm not sure.
That's right.
I'm pronouncing that right. Knobloch. We're giving them 1.66 acres, but we're also giving them $165,000.
No, they are giving us the 1.66 acres, an easement on the 1.66 acres, and we're purchasing it for the 165,100. It is an amendment to a conservation easement that we did last year that was donated, a 31-acre easement. And this parcel is like a donut hole in the center, and the purchase is coming through the state's highway administration as part of mitigation for disturbance that they had done previously on another conservation easement in Carroll County. And so they are purchasing the easement on the 1.66 acres to add it into the total now 33-acre easement.
But didn't the state give them money in mitigation of the state highway, or give them land in mitigation of the state highway?
Completing the whole transaction. So the state's highway administration took away land from another easement to do road work, mm-hmm. and as part of that agreement, an MOU was established that said that SHA would purchase approximately 2 acres easement on another property somewhere in Carroll County, and this is the approximately 2 acres, the 1.66 acres that they are purchasing the easement on to complete the MOU.
Just seemed like they've been really good at negotiating this, but maybe that's just because I didn't understand the moving pieces. I still have to say I'm not quite. Maybe I'm a little slow today, but I just find that I can't really. Do you have a diagram of this? Or a photo or something? So I can.
I do not. So you'll see the yellow portion is the portion that we put in a donated easement last year, uh-huh. and the red portion is a separate parcel, but that is what is the current 1.66 acres that is being purchased to be included as part of the easement.
So that's what we're paying, $165,000?
Yes.
And then this other yellow thing is what? Is that the land that...
No, that's just another MET easement. Just showing an easement.
And where's the land that's being given to the Knobloch, the one in mitigation?
There's no land being given to the Knobloch. The mitigation happened on another property in Carroll County, which isn't shown on that map. It was another easement property.
So we have two separate transactions
yes.
in one. Okay.
The transaction that happened for the mitigation happened several years ago. So this is only the mitigation part to finish up the whole process of the MOU.
I just wanted to make sure it was all clear to somebody. Thank you.
Okay. Any other questions on the balance of the Secretary's agenda? Hearing none, Comptroller moves approval of the balance of the Secretary's agenda, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to program open space.
Good morning, Governor. Aye. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. Meredith Lasserie with the Department of Natural Resources, and we have two items on the program open space agenda this morning, one local program open space project and one rural legacy easement. I'd be happy to answer any questions you might have.
Okay. questions? Questions? No. Comptroller moves approval. See it land squarely within the green print, adjacent to already protected land, and also within the boundaries of the designated rural legacy area.
Absolutely.
This makes it a three bell acquisition. Okay. Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it. We move on to the Department of Budget Management.
Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, good morning. There are six items on the Department of Budget Management's agenda for the day, and I'll be happy to answer any questions. Sorry.
Secretary, did you notice the reports in the newspaper last week that the nation added 162,000 jobs in the month of March, which is the largest amount of jobs added in our economy since October 2007? That's pretty good, wasn't it?
It was very good.
We need more of that, don't we?
Yes, we do.
Any other questions?
Well, I think it's interesting that the argument is that the unemployment rate stays where it is because people feel encouraged and they're coming back into the job market who had been discouraged out of it. Mm-hmm. It's ironic that you can have declining unemployment, rising employment, and increasing or steady unemployment at the same time because you're talking about human dynamics.
I don't want to beat a dead horse. There's an issue. There's a contract here, 1S. It's the human resources in home aid services. This goes back to last fall. I gather we have made progress, in fact, and everyone seems to think that this item is in better shape than the one last fall was, and for that I commend everybody. I do think, and I know this is a source of difference, I guess, among the staff, that the entire history of an item ought to be displayed to the principal so that we can put it in context. I don't think that's asking anything that is reasonable, and especially when it shows good progress having been made.
Actually, what you did back in the fall was you did not approve a contract.
Right.
And the direction that we were given was to go out and do a new procurement. So essentially, no historical background was provided because essentially this is a brand new procurement.
Yes, it is.
And
but it is, except some of the issues that are addressed in this one arose because of the last one. And I'm interested in seeing, for instance, this whole issue of prime contractors as MBEs has advanced significantly. Which I think is very good, and was a problem in the last one, whether you count them or not. I gather the whole thing has been restructured, so it's not directly comparable, but some of the issues, I think, have been back.
I mean, I think certainly the Department of Human Resources heard your concerns. They went out. They got this done in less than 6 months. Certainly what they've done is they're making more awards that were in the prior contract. They have more MBEs. And I think it's a far better contract. On the basis in terms of the history, this was the first time I think we've ever been requested to do this. And certainly, I'd like to have a further discussion with you in regard to this.
Anytime.
Thank you.
I understand that there weren't MBE issues for subcontractors because there's little room for subcontracting. Is that right?
That is correct. Let me introduce myself. I'm Brian Wilbon, Deputy Secretary for the Department of Human Resources. With me is April Seitz, who is our Director of our Adult Services Program for the department. Because this is primarily staff, this is staff going into homes, there was a small portion of supplies or other non-direct service opportunities to do MBE. And so what we did is we did targeted outreaches to MBEs, and we're happy to report that 9 of the vendors that we're reporting are recommending for award are MBEs. There's an additional 3 that have a dual certification as a small business reserve and 5 others that are classified as SBRs.
And
And so there's less subcontracting than there was in the fall.
That's correct. One of the challenges we had in the existing contract was these existing vendors finding opportunities to have subcontracting opportunities.
I think he's talking the incumbent one, and I'm not sure they were reaching the goal on the incumbent one.
That's
you
correct.
Had said how pretty high, but I think the problem was nobody was really reaching it.
That is correct.
Madam Treasurer. Just to interject, good morning, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller, Governor. We, for the record, LaWanda Jenkins, Governor's Office of Minority Affairs. What really happened with this, as Deputy Secretary indicated, was we took a different strategy. Rather than trying to kind of piece together small incremental subcontracting opportunities for MBEs, we took a look at how could we position more MBEs to be prime contractors to actually do the in-home aid service, which is the primary work on this contract. So as a result, through a combined effort between our two offices, we have 9 of the 35 contractors on this contract are prime MBE firms, and they will participate at a much higher rate than if we were to have across the board smaller incremental MBE goals. So that's part of the strategy of what we're looking at with large state contracts. How can we carve out more opportunities for minority firms to participate at the prime level? And this contract demonstrates exactly what we're trying to do. So we have a better outcome.
Speaking for myself, I think that's great because it's a real contract for real needed services and really expanding the pool of MBEs. I commend everybody. Thank you.
Do we track MBE firms?
Yes, we do. So we're doing considerably well with MBE Prime, and we hope to continue that growth.
When will we know whether we hit our enterprise-wide goal or MBE first time in California?
We actually, as of mid-year, fiscal year 10, we have hit that goal. I'm looking to make sure we sustain that goal for the balance of this fiscal year, but we are very much on track to have met that goal for this fiscal year for the first time in the 30-year history of the program.
And that's not only good. That's not only percentage, but the dollar amount.
The percentage,
well, right?
The dollar amount that has gone to MBEs, both on awards and payments, because we are also tracking payments.
No, the dollar amount's gone.
The dollar amount.
It's not just a matter of the overall contraction and the huge cuts in spending.
Right. Even with the huge cuts in spending, we are maintaining and exceeding our efforts to ensure that minority firms don't lose out with any reduced spending.
We're actually
doing more.
Okay.
Significantly more, and more in prime contracting.
Right. Any other questions on this one? About any other questions, anything else from the Department of Budget Management? Controller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All opposed? The ayes have it. We move on now to the University System of Maryland.
Good morning, Governor, Mr. Comptroller, Madam Treasurer. I'm Jim Sterling for the University System of Maryland. We have 10 items on today's agenda. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Item 3. Well, what is this a new initiative?
Part of it is. I have with me here today Dr. Ann Wiley, our Vice President for Administrative Affairs, and if you will, I'd like to invite her up to talk about that.
Wonderful.
The Office of Extended Studies over the last several years has expanded their activities. The Young Scholars Program is an example. We try to bring in rising juniors and rising seniors, highly academically talented students from the state of Maryland. We're interested in keeping Maryland's most talented students in the state, and we found this to be a very effective recruiting tool. It also introduces them to majors they might not have considered otherwise, which helps us a lot. And we are very interested in making sure that the students in the high schools of the state of Maryland are aware of that. We have an expanded professional studies, Masters of Professional Studies, Master of Life Sciences is one, but we have many trying to address workforce needs within the state. A few years ago, we consolidated all of these activities. We had two offices that were doing them. We consolidated them under the Office of Extended Studies. And so this is a consolidated office looking at all these activities. They also do summer school, winter term. And we are very interested in expanding these. It makes good use of our facilities when our more traditional programs are not utilizing them.
That's terrific. And do you work with University College? Because they have this incredibly successful model where they provide distance learning for 90,000 plus students, I think. Does this fit with any of their talent or technology? Or how does it fit with University College, I guess?
Well, we don't want to duplicate their programs. We don't think that's particularly in anyone's best interest. So we have very targeted online programs. We actually have very limited numbers of online programs. University College does this really well. But we do the Master of Life Sciences, for example, is a targeted online program for high school teachers of life sciences. And it fits well with our mission and very targeted. And so we also have an online program in fire protection engineering, one of the few in the nation. So we have restricted, in a sense, our online programming to places where we feel that we have real expertise, can offer a very important program, and that we don't really want to compete with University College.
Good. I think it's a good, complementary. I mean, they're right next to you, and, you're both powerhouses. I just want to make sure we're not limiting you or them through some other policies and stuff that, is out there. Yeah. So
I don't think that's the case. We see ourselves as complementary.
Good. Thank you.
How many teachers avail themselves of the Life Sciences Master's?
400.
That's great.
Are in the program, actively involved in the program.
And I
don't know how many we've graduated. I'm sorry, I didn't have that number, but it's extremely popular, and it just took off. We've offered it for a number of years. We have people from all over the country, not just Maryland teachers, but it's a very good program.
What's the course of study?
It's a master. It takes about 2 years.
Uh-huh.
And, the life sciences field is changing so quickly that to offer this kind of a master's program for high school teachers really brings them up and makes sure that the curriculum is up to date.
Which feeds into the whole STEM initiative. How many of the 400 do you think are Maryland teachers?
I'll find that out for you. I don't know.
Uh-huh. Okay. Any other questions on the university system of Maryland, Poseidon, or any others? Comptroller moves approval, seconded by the Treasurer. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We're going to skip over and do it. We're going to do it later. And we're going to go to the Maryland Department of Transportation.
Good morning, Governor, Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. For the record, Beverly Swain Staley, representing the Maryland Department of Transportation. We have 10 items today. 2C and 4C have been previously revised, and we're available for questions.
Any questions? Department of Transportation.
Mr. Yes, Trump. Item 10, Madam Secretary.
Yes.
Is the new on-airport rental auto concession contract.
Yes, it's a modification to the previous contract, which was negotiated with the car rental facilities. They actually asked for it because, of course, they have to help pay for the bus services and other services.
And do you have any analysis of the fees we charge at the airport and how competitive that is or not competitive with?
Overall, I don't have the specific fees on this. I can get that for you. But overall, in the region's airports, BWI is always rated as the low-cost airport, both for in terms of our charges as well as obviously for passengers, but even in terms of what the overall cost whether it's car rental, whether it's airline, for the fees that we charge them, et cetera. But I can certainly get you all the specifics and breakdowns on that.
Yeah, no, because I'm just concerned that we you know, we keep adding these fees, obviously for a good
right.
cause, and the rental companies want us to. I understand that, but if you could send me something
yes, we'll
that just lists what all the charges are, because...
absolutely.
That's you're right. That's a real asset to the state.
Yeah, it's something we obviously do have to watch out for to make sure we don't price ourselves out of the regional market.
Thank
so
you.
I'd be happy to provide those. Good question.
Any other questions on the Department of Transportation? Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed, nay. The ayes have it. We move now to the Department of General Services. Secretary Al Collin.
Good morning, Governor. Madam Treasurer, Mr. Comptroller. The Department of General Services has 20 items on our agenda today. There is one revision to item 2C. Governor, I'd like to add that we have two construction contracts, items 1C and 2C, of approximately $12.5 million, a little over that in terms of cost. $3.1 plus million was in the E construction, MBE firms, and these two items add 60 jobs to Maryland's job growth. And they're on Easter Street. And I'd be glad to answer any questions you have, Governor. And I'd like to point out that we have a number of distinguished individuals with us today, but I'd especially like to point out Mayor Ron James from the small town of Galestown. He assures me I can't find him if I come to look for him, but I see if I can do it. Right here.
Great time.
Good morning.
Mayor Ron James.
This is item 13, CCO.
Item 13. So what are we doing here, Mayor?
We're trying to repair a community center. It's the only community building within miles. We're a very small town. We have a population of 102. However, I saw a pickup backed up to a truck, and maybe 101 when I get back. We're destitute. As you know, it's a $50,000 matching grant, which is more than the annual salary of the three people we actually have working in town. So we've been counting our pennies and getting funds from people in town by selling flowers to Avon, and we have come up with their $50,000. The building was built 72 years ago. People were actually falling through the floor from powder post beetle damage, and it was get another sheet of plywood and cover the hole. So we desperately need the funds. We are destitute. We only have one suit in town. I have to get back tonight because the guy wants it for a funeral.
We've heard many things here at the board. That's a first. Okay, any questions on the Department of General Services?
Governor, I probably shouldn't say that, but this project, which I think is outstanding, long overdue, and both locally and state funded. The other projects here, homes for the homeless, shelters for abused children. I would only point out that this is what people sometimes refer to as pork.
Yes, ma'am.
And I think they're very important projects to very real people. Thank you.
Okay. Treasurer moves approval. Seconded by the Comptroller. All in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed? The ayes have it. Congratulations.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Mayor. All right, let's go to the Department of Information Technology. Did I see you all giving out trees today?
Treasurer has one.
Where did you get your tree?
Only
treasure?
The special people. It grows on this desk. As far as I don't know. Howard got it.
Yeah, that's good. That's
We have
from the tree farm system. Arbor Day. Today is Arbor Day. This is an eastern white pine, Maryland.
Some of the indigenous people that named trees have concern. All right.
Good morning, Governor. Not a
from the trees to the weeds.
Elliot Slanger, Department of Information Technology. We have two items this morning. Item 2IT, we are returning from our meeting of 324. That is related to a multiple award master contract for VLTs. At this time, we'll be glad to enter into discussion or ask any questions or answer any questions that you may have.
Governor, I'd just like to thank Elliot and the lottery agency folks for taking all the time to meet with representatives of our office and DBM, Capital Budget. As you know, we had a question when it turned out that at the last moment we were informed that ongoing plans for the future included use of capital lease, and if that had not been considered by the Capital Debt Affordability Committee. I will say what I said at the end of the last meeting, which is what is before us right now is simply the authorization for the umbrella contract going forth, and I understand that for the first step there are in fact funds available and leasing capacity available. For the future years, it seems to me that this is an issue that has got to be examined by the Capital Debt Affordability Committee. I've talked with many of the members of that committee. They agree we are going to have a surprisingly long agenda for an election year interim. But to understand how all of these things fit together, it's not only this item, but there are other capital items coming before us that had not been factored in terms of timing into the capital debt affordability considerations, and we simply have to examine them. But that, I will say, as I think I said 2 weeks ago, that is not the item before us. What is before us is the authorization to enter into contracts, not the specific method of leasing them after the first.
That is correct. That is absolutely correct. The master contract would establish the relationship. It's not a commitment to expend funds either.
Exactly.
Right.
And it's my understanding that as the funds are expended, there will be review not only by the Lottery Commission, but by your office.
That is correct. And that would be a task order for a specific piece of work or the acquisition of the
under
machines.
This master contract.
That's correct.
And that to the extent they involve lease financing, capital lease financing, above a minimal level, they will in fact come back from the Treasurer's Office after your examination to the Treasurer's Office to this board.
That is not correct. I do not think.
It's a master contract. I think the reason for the master contract arrangement.
But the financing items.
But the financing is outside the
master. Not the task orders. The finance. Right. The financing. I'm just trying to clarify this as much for my own benefit and understanding as yours. And I know there are a couple of other issues.
So what we're trying to arrive at, I mean, the thrust of the questions the last time and also the memo from Delegate Turner with the Legislative Black Caucus that came this morning seems to be a desire to establish some sort of threshold to make sure that we are, in fact, enforcing and monitoring MBE, that there's some mechanism for reviewing that. You could be the designee, our designee on this for the task force, but I think the question that
And then I think Elias is here. Is there a certain threshold, given the broad and attenuated nature of the master contract, is there some sort of dollar threshold that should trigger a return to the Board of Public Works? And that's, is that accurate, you think, as a kind of summation of...
And I assume that Hewitt will be working with DOMA throughout the process.
So
when the issue was raised about bringing task orders to the board last time, it was pointed out that there were just a huge number of task orders of often a small amount. So the question arises, is there a threshold above which it would be appropriate to...
So
that's the governor's question.
Sure. So, if I may, I think the best way to talk about this is through experience, because we have something we can see, we can touch. So, the master contract is not a new idea. It's been in place for a while. And if we take the one that, say, DOIT happens to administrate over, which, in fact, this board had approved and applauded just several months ago, there was, in the first contract, over 200 TORFPs that represented a dollar amount well in excess of $200 million. So on average, they were worth well over, $1 million each. Not to say that there were not a number of them that were not that large and some that were fairly large. And as part of our review, it includes the technical oversight, the contractual oversight, which is actually predefined by in the master agreement. And we look at NDE. And one of the things that this board applauded was the fact that for the total of primes and subs, NDE participation was over 50%. So if we look at existing master contracts in operation, again, with the goal of being expeditious, to streamlining the process, there are internal controls that look at all aspects of the contract that really made the board comfortable in not having to bring back the task orders here. If asked, we report on how well we do, and as you know, we have that information. So what I would say is, it is with the board that I respect you, direct us to do whatever you think is the right thing. I just think that the precedent is that we have the controls, we have the history, and I think we could administrate this as master contracts. Mr. Comptroller.
Yeah, I just want to get back to my confusion with this, which is, why are we being asked to approve $800 million for the purchase of up to 15,000 slot machines when everyone concedes we're only going to need 2,200 over the next year? And here's my concern. When the public doesn't understand this master contract and ceilings, et cetera, they see us voting, when they thought they were going to get $600 million from slots, they see us voting to give $800 million of taxpayers' money. And it's not as if it's in a vacuum. I mean, we're cutting state jobs, we're cutting state programs, we're in a fiscal crisis, we've got a long-term structural deficit that everybody's struggling with. We're simply not swimming in money. So when we vote for this kind of a contract, I think it has a real public relations problem. But from what the treasurer just said, I'm really concerned about this being what I see as an irregular procurement policy here. I know you allude to the IT master contract, and I don't have problems with that. This is with the gambling industry. To put this amount of money, you know, with all the best intentions of our state employees, into a process that is not scrutinized closely, I think just is asking for trouble that we don't want. And I hope, I don't know whether the treasurer was asking for the task orders to come back or under a certain amount, as the governor was perhaps alluding to. But I think these contracts need to come back before the board. This is not Xerox and IBM. This is Bally Gaming, Diamond Game Enterprises, KGM Gaming, Scientific Games. I mean, it's just, it doesn't sit well with me that we're going to allow all of you in the bureaucracy, who are terrific people, I'm not implying anything, to be put into this kind of a environment with $800 million in this particular sector. So I hope that at a minimum, I'm not enthusiastic about this, but I think at a minimum the public would be served if we brought these contracts back. In contrast to the other master contract that I agree with you has been successful. And I'm particularly concerned if we're going to be using the financing of this money as a oversight tool. I mean, if we're going to be looking over the finance behind the curtain into things like MBE and procurement fairness, I don't know what the people that are getting on the financing would think of that, but I don't think that's that I see having its own risks. So I hope we could bring this back. I know there's a momentum to not bring them back, but I'd really like to reverse that, at least for the next year, until we get more comfortable with it.
I think there are two issues that you raise. The first is the ceiling for the contract. Again, it is not a commitment to spend a dollar, but I understand the perception.
The potential for misperception. I think that sells our able members of the media short, as well as the intelligent public.
Right. So one path is, to maintain the integrity as really demonstrated by the master contract and lower the ceiling. That was one issue. The other issue is, if the board should, desire to see these acquisitions, singularly, then, the master contract may not have been, the model that happens to suit. And the trade-off is, when, in fact, the lottery and we went into this, our discussion was we're in a business of, technology, customer service, and we were looking for agility, the ability to be nimble. So there's a trade-off there. But, today I just need to present the options, and, we need to come to consensus on which is the best way to move forward.
Let me just keep follow up on that. Do you have any problems with bringing these back for board approval?
Well, what I would say is bringing a task order back, which is not a contract, I would think would be pretty irregular. Coming back to the board to reporting what we've done on a frequent basis, I don't have any issues. The board can tell me what they prefer. We'd be happy to comply.
Well, if I could just continue, because I think the issue here is cost. We're talking $800 million for 15,000 machines. Comes out to $53,000 a machine. And someone on my staff said, what kind of mileage do these things get on the highway? I could go and buy a brand new, F-150 Ford truck off the assembly line for that amount of money. And so the cost, and I understand that, is the lottery here? Someone representing the lottery? If someone could come forward, because I know last time we were here, you were talking about maintenance, and forgive me if I have some concerns about maintenance being part of that $53,000, because Why are these machines, why are we buying them if they're so fragile?
The machines need to be maintained. I'm sorry. Robert Howells, procurement director for the state lottery. The machines need to be maintained like any other piece of equipment. There's ongoing maintenance. These machines need to be serviced. We have situations in the facilities where machines jam, where there's damage done to them by players. It's an ongoing maintenance situation for all the machines. You indicated the $53,000 per machine. You had mentioned that last time we were here, and I had explained that the overall number includes maintenance, it includes conversions of machines, it includes changing out games. You can't just do a simple dividing $15,000 into 600 million and come up with a number. The machines don't cost $53,000 a piece.
How much do they cost?
They're probably in the range of half that. Like anything else, there are some premium machines that do cost more money. But the average run-of-the-mill machine, you're probably looking in the ballpark $20,000, somewhere in that range, $20,000 to $30,000. To address the topic at hand, the lottery has no difficulty with the board approving a lesser amount of money than the $600,000. That is based on the 15,000 machines.
$600 million.
I'm sorry?
The $600 million.
$600 million, excuse me. It's based on the 15,000 machines. We need, and we had added a couple of sentences to the agenda item, during the next fiscal year, we need about $150 million for the two facilities that are definitely scheduled to open, and the third facility that we don't know yet, the one at Arundel Mills. It could go either way. We didn't want to come in and ask for a low amount of money and then continually come back to you for more money and be criticized for not telling you from the beginning what we thought the total cost of this project was going to be. But if the board feels more comfortable approving, let's say, $150 million for the first three facilities, then we would have to come back to increase that ceiling as we open the other facilities. That's fine. We have no issue with that. Bringing back every individual task order is an operational nightmare, and it will impact our ability to accommodate the facility operators with the machines they need, with the schedule they need to get facilities open, with the schedule they need and the responsiveness if they need to change out machines and do all the things that facility operators need to do in order to make this a successful and profitable program. And as the governor has indicated a couple of times, this is a revenue-generating operation. We are not just paying out money and it's gone. We expect to generate far more than what we're paying out on this program, and we need to get it up and running, and we need to get moving forward. We talked about Rocky Gap a little bit earlier, possibly doing an RFP in the next couple of months to get Rocky Gap up and running. They're going to need machines. We need to get this contract in place. So,
you mentioned, if I could, Governor, you mentioned Anne Arundel Mills. Forgive me if this has already been talked about, but someone said the other day that there were some plans to have temporary facilities built for the Anne Arundel.
Is that a possibility, of course, subject to whatever happens with the referendum. There are obviously a lot of legal actions going on. We just don't know what's going to happen yet. But again, we need to be ready. If something happens and Arundel Mills goes forward quickly, we need to be prepared to accommodate that.
Well, at a minimum, it's going to take until after the election, I think, because there's going to be some vote that I read about in the paper.
That's the referendum.
Yes, that's the referendum. So,
well, but there's a lawsuit pending about the referendum. So,
okay.
I wouldn't want to speculate on what's going to happen with that. So.
But have people talked about dimensions or what this temporary facility would look like?
I don't know that we have specifics yet, but it is a possibility that they may try and go forward with a temporary facility. And that is something that they are authorized to do under their license from the facility location. They're approved.
Well, I would certainly feel a lot more comfortable if we were approving the 2,200 machines at the sites where we know those in all likelihood, Ocean City site and the site whatever that other one is. And I think, you know, depending on the litigation or on the referendum, whichever it is, you could come back and ask for the ones that you want to put in a Quonsy Hut or whatever it is at Anne Arundel, in Anne Arundel, at a future meeting. I would feel a lot more comfortable doing that than this the other proposal. And what you're saying is, you don't want to come back for Anne Arundel, but surely we could wait 6 months on that, and then you could be adequately prepared, I think. Is that your testimony?
Yes, sir.
Let's hear.
The difference between the total authorization for the $600 million and some lesser amount, $200 million, whatever it is, will that impact in any way the bids that you get or the prices that you will pay?
At the task order level?
Mm-hmm.
I don't think so. We'll be issuing those task orders per facility. Obviously, the
You're not locking people into a longer-term price by doing the total umbrella contract?
Yes. The master contract has locked in maximum prices over the entire 5-year
period.
But
you don't think whether it's 800 or 200 makes any difference?
No, because when we go to buy individual machines on an individual task order, those maximum prices that are locked into the master contract are still the maximum prices. As we explained, we're hoping that during the task order process, when we're issuing one for a specific purchase, we will be able to do better on those prices. But the contract sets the maximum prices for the 5-year period.
If I may, if in fact the question is related to if we were to lower the amount and affect the quantity discount, I don't think that's the case. Nothing is guaranteed to any one of the vendors when in fact we have a order or we have an opportunity. All go to compete, so it's based on that particular clump of work, if you will. I think we're pretty public about the potential of how many of the machines we can have, and so I think that all of the vendors have the ability to plan ahead, but I think if we were to adjust the ceiling amount, it would not affect the price that we would pay for any one order.
Okay. I apologize. That was not the impression I got last
No, because they bid on the maximum prices based on the 15,000 machines over 5 years. So, as Elliot said, when we do individual task orders, I don't think that would impact them.
Let's hear from Mr. Fraser.
Good morning, Governor. President. My name is Wayne Frazier. I'm president of the Maryland Washington Minority Contractors Association. And I've heard a different story today than from last time. I'm concerned, though, when Mr. Slanger compared the IT industry with over $200 million being spent and 50% minority participation. I don't believe that type of the IT industry compares with gaming. That type of IT, I presume, would be IBM, Xerox, and so forth. But with gaming, it's a different industry. Mr. Controller, you mentioned that. It's a different industry. Gaming has not been used to participating in minority business. Nowhere in this country, and as I said before, in the world, is there minority participation. And I'm concerned that giving lottery the opportunity to just grant these task orders and these gaming companies pressuring them, saying, oh, we can't meet the minority participation, as a result, we want a waiver. And I see that happening because the gaming companies have never done this before. And it's about changing culture. I believe firmly that there should be a level set, perhaps $5 million, where it comes back to the board for review to ensure that we have this participation. And in regards to how we get the participation, there's several ways. And the one, Ms. Treasurer, you indicated about the capital lease. Well, if that's the case, we have minority financing institutions that can participate on the state level on the 25%. And then we can hit the participation there and then perhaps relieve the gaming company on that particular point for leasing if it's the state's going to buy. So I don't believe that folks have thought this out completely, and I don't want the opportunity for MBE to be missed in this at all. At all.
Questions? All right. Let's, Mr. Steiner, any response to that? Could you, as the designee, I mean, might you do a, you would have no problem coming back to us on a quarterly basis in terms of what we're hitting in terms of MBE, WBE goals, would you?
Not at all.
Ms. Jenkins, what are your thoughts on that?
Certainly, the will of the board will certainly comply with that. There has been, and I shared with the board members at the end of the last meeting, a one-page memo that really outlines what we have done to ensure that there's maximum inclusion of minority firms on this. We are really not leaving anything to chance. If this item is approved today, there is a joint letter signed off by me and the chair of the Lottery Commission, which is going to all nine of the master contractors. It will explicitly spell out the MBE process and the consequences for not complying with that process. Prior to that, it may be helpful to know that all nine of the companies were required to provide an MBE, sign off on an MBE affidavit. That affidavit was the first wave of making them aware of exactly how serious the state of Maryland is about MBE compliance, and it specifically spells out the consequences for not complying when they submit their bids for their task orders. So we are proactively ensuring that there is minority participation. We've been working with the Lottery and the Lottery Commission. We will continue to do so. We have a planned conference call with all nine of the task order companies upon approval if this action item gets approved today, to ensure that they do understand that this is a very serious obligation and that we intend to hold them accountable to it.
Well,
I think that's progress on the MBE, and I continue to have my concerns about costs. I would think that if rather than $800 million, if we could vote $100 million and have the board vote not on the task orders, but on the whatever it is you come up with from the procurement, so that we can hold everyone's feet to the fire, both on MBE and costs, that's something that I think you know, makes sense, given the current state of the slots applications and processes. And if it's too little, we could always, I mean, heck, we meet every 2 weeks here. It's not out of the question, but I just think in these hard times, that both, I understand that it's in the governor and the treasurer's minds, it's spending money to get money. I can see that, but that's a lot of money. So defer to my colleagues, I guess.
I'm just not quite sure.
In other words, I would like to see, instead of $800 million, we approve $100 million, and, which is the amount, $150 minus, I take it, Anne Arundel. Come back on Anne Arundel and based on what happens with the litigation, and
and then just make sure that the board approves, at least in the first year, the result of your procurement, so that we're not just having to reach over the financing group or reach over you. And, you know, instead of reporting to us, I'd like you to bring back whatever the result of the procurement is and have us vote on it.
I think 200 might be more prudent, no?
Well, we were talking about that. What is the minimum that you need? Is like 200, not what required. So I think the number is 200. Not that I need to negotiate here.
What? Why do you set it at 200? What is that?
It will give us...
Could you introduce yourself, please, Ms.
Smith? Gina Smith, Interim Director for the Lottery. It'll give us enough funding to get up and running with the two facilities that we spoke about, as well as have money available in any unforeseen circumstances, any game changes, or anything else that may come our way.
And the contracts would come back for our vote.
What contract?
It's or the order...
I don't want to bog us down on every. I want to get a vote on what you guys signed for, as far as you know. My concern about MBE, and my concern about cost.
With the $200 million, that would be the not-to-exceed amount on this master contract, and we would not come back to the board until we need more money under that contract.
That. I'm speaking in your own defense. This is, you do not want this, because it's going to end up being risky and irregular, and we're going to rue the day that we do this. It's a really toxic mix of things that I think it's better if we're giving the final approval to.
Well, if I may, and just to really expand on the idea that the governor had, the thought was to report back on MBE participation on a quarterly basis. To that report, we could add to the status of the contract with respect to acquisitions and give a full disclosure of everything that we have done in that period. What that essentially would really boil down to is we're never more than, say, 90 days in kind of knowing where we are with the contract, and if there need to be any incremental adjustments, there is ample time to...
If I could just interrupt, what about what Mr. Frazier mentioned, $5 million contract? I guess I'm confused as to what the problem is with bringing us back under the master contract. Whatever, I assume there'll be three or four winners or two or three winners. Why not just bring those back to the board and defend it and allow us to vote on it?
Well, so with all due respect, I kind of know when I submit an item to the board, there is a process of time that takes about a month or so. And again, in a consumer-oriented industry where, in fact, we're relying on operators to produce certain results, it's the principle of why we have to propose using this as a vehicle. We want to be expeditious. So that is a concern for us.
Now, I really appreciate that. And I just think it's a vehicle that's more appropriate for IBM and Xerox. It is not appropriate for the gambling industry. This is an industry that needs transparency. We don't want it to be negotiated behind closed doors. And that's why I really hope that we can agree that anything that's, I'm happy to say $5 million, if that's the amount that you enter into, we vote on. Really hope that is the result. And I don't think, based on what you're telling me, that it would be a big imposition, because we're only buying machines for two, perhaps three facilities. But think the national gaming industry needs more transparency, not less.
What about the bottom line threshold? How does that impact the practical matter?
Walk through what the process would be as you see it, with or without the $5 million.
Yeah, when we get ready to place a specific order for a given number of machines, we would be issuing what we call requests for quotation, RFQ. It's the same thing as what Elliot calls a task order. It's the same idea. That would go out to however many manufacturers can provide that machine or something similar to it. They would respond with their prices, with their delivery schedule, machine specifications, and so forth. We would then make a selection from whoever responded to that task order as far as a specific machine purchase. Whether we got one response, if it was a machine that only one particular manufacturer was capable of making, or whether it was two or three of those master contractors, we would then select from those responses to the RFQs or the task orders who we were going to buy that group of machines from. And as I said, we've got for each facility, we've got potentially 9 different types of machines, 9 different manufacturers. There are multiple iterations of different types of machines from each manufacturer. I mean, some manufacturers probably have 20, 30 different types of machines, depending on what that facility operator was looking for. So when we say how many task orders, it's difficult to say at this point. We could be issuing 5 or 6 or 7 different task orders that would possibly wind up with one manufacturer for different types of machines that they have. So we're talking a lot of different task orders, and it's a daily operational type process, which is why we have concerns that coming back to the board with every single operational task order that we do is going to be a huge time burden. As Elliot indicated, it's not just coming back here, walking in the door every 2 weeks. There's preparation. There's about a month lead time to submit these items to the board, to get them reviewed, get them on the agenda. And at the same time, we are walking this line where we have to be responsive to those facility operators. They're looking for machines. They expect us to provide them. And as I had said before, the law requires us to put together a list of manufacturers that are pre-approved, that these facility operators can select from, and establish a process where they can pick from that list.
Governor, if I could just ask a question, because I think we're way overcomplicating this. You've got 2 facilities that are going to open, maybe a third. I can't imagine you can't come back to us and say, to open these facilities, here is what we're planning to enter into an agreement to purchase. Once the machines are in the facilities, obviously if somebody wants to rotate one out and put another one in, we don't want to see that. But, we'll go crazy with that. But this is, I just don't see, I think you're getting us too far down in the weeds on this one, because you could very easily bring us what each facility needs to open, and we could approve it. Then after that, I take it, I agree with you. Elliot and others, that it's probably, in subsequent years for those facilities, I don't think we need to be micromanaging. But for the original thing, I can't imagine it's going to be too onerous, and I think it will be very beneficial in allowing sunlight on this so that everybody is comfortable.
And both of those will be over what amount to get started? Both of those get started. And it will be probably over 50 million, won't they? For each location?
Ballpark, yeah. Ballpark. Yeah.
Well, then I like the idea of Philip being our designee, making quarterly reports. Mm-hmm. Reduce the level down to 200 million.
The comptroller makes, is this going to be the process? You're going to lay out, you're going to be working with your the awardee to lay out the initial setup at a slot. So you'll have that picture of what you're going into. Is that correct?
Right, there will be an initial order, right, exactly, yes.
So that's what you're talking about, is it? And that initial order will be a couple tens of millions for each one or something on that order. And what the comptroller is suggesting is that the board look at that.
And approve it as opposed to just being reported.
What's the impact of that?
Again, we're just very concerned about time. We just want to be up and ready by the time Penn National is ready to open because the state does not want to be the holdup here.
We understand that.
There's, there is also a turnaround time from after we get with the facilities and determine what our order is. The order has to be placed with the manufacturers, and there's a lead time on that. Then we have to get the machines out on the floor prior to opening because we have to test them. And again, we're just very concerned that if we have to come back out and can't move forward.
Let me ask you this. If the issue is sunshine, there would be no problem, I assume, with coming forward with that plan before you go ahead with the purchase. Whether it's approved or not, it would receive the same amount of sunshine.
We have no problem sharing everything as we move forward. Again,
not everything. That plan. I mean,
the plan exactly, and what we plan to purchase. We're just concerned about the lead time to manufacture the machines, get them out on the floor, and properly test them. And they've got to be on the floor by this summer. And we're just afraid that we're backing ourselves into a corner, and we don't want to be the ones saying that the state is not ready when Penn National is ready. That's our concern.
Yeah. I mean, I don't see how that conflicts with. I mean, when are you going to be ready to say what you're going to need at Penn National site?
Well, we hope in about 3 weeks' time we'll be able to decide on what Penn National will need. And then we've got to come back, get the approval, and then turn around to the manufacturers and actually place the orders at that point.
And your concern is?
That the lead time to manufacture, because again, we don't know what we're purchasing at this time, the lead time to manufacture, get the machines here, set them up on the floor, and then start testing them to ensure everything communicates properly.
But all he was saying was to lay out what that initial plan is.
Madam Treasurer, I want to vote on the contract. This book that we just finished looking at is filled with contracts that are on short notices. Agencies have to get our approval for contracts, I'm sure they hate doing, but it fulfills a public policy purpose. And in this area, you know, I understand all your logistical concerns, but if the agencies properly manage, they ought to be able to bring back these major contracts for these facilities and get us to approve it. And if you don't have your act together and you can't get it done, then, you know, that raises more concerns. But from what you've said, I think you make the argument for even more oversight. I'm just saying, let's get a vote on these initial big facility contracts. And as I say, I think it will protect you and the board from something that may or may not happen. Hopefully it won't. But if it does happen, it could really impact the operation of the facility.
Can I ask that we do $200 million and anything above $50 million come back for us? What about that? Does that do that? As well as the quarterly reporting so we do the other.
Yeah, not 50. It's got to be lower than that.
49.
I mean, How many contracts? You're only going to have three master contracts or two, right, for these facilities? I mean,
we have one master contract with nine contractors.
Yeah, but you're going to have a contract you're going to sign to put the machines in the facilities. You're not doing everything ad hoc. You've got an overall.
Well, each facility will have a mixture of machines.
Right. You're going to have all of that in one package, and I'm saying bring that back to us. I don't know whether it's $50 million or $20 million, what the right level is. I just want to have a vote on those, each of those initial opening proposals.
There'll be a plan for each facility that opens, which could include up to nine manufacturers providing machines for each facility.
Yes.
Right. We won't know that. Maybe it's only six manufacturers at 1%.
Right. But bring it back. Look at this book here. Every single one of these has situations.
You say 3 weeks. You want to be. What did you want?
3 weeks. We would like to know the machine next, the facilities.
So in 4 weeks, you would be prepared to make that public and bring it back here for approval.
That's the plan.
This is what I want. Yeah. This.
I don't want each little task order. But he was talking earlier about sunshine and about seeing where we were going and what that initial plan was. And it seems to me if we review that initial plan, we could say yes, we buy in, and then you've got this subsequent reporting as you said, of both expenditures and MBEs.
But to be clear, the plan is essentially what the facility operators are going to give us, like their wish list. We then have to take that wish list and go out to the manufacturers of the machines and see if, in fact, we can fulfill that plan. There may be machines on there that are just far too expensive. They're outside of our budget. There may be, they might want a machine from one manufacturer. We may come back and say, that manufacturer is just too expensive. We're going to have to go to somebody else. So that plan is a fluid thing. It's not something that's set in stone when the facility operator says, this is what I want. Now, we're going to try and give them what they want because they're the operator and they need to put that floor in a condition that they think is going to make the maximum return for everybody. But that process will go forward and play out over time.
I'm happy to vote no if I have to, but I'd really like to have a compromise consensus. And Mr. Secretary, can you help us get down to three votes on three facilities, or one vote per facility on what is actually being entered into on behalf of the taxpayers, so that we can, like all these other contracts we vote on here, we can actually oversee it. I mean, I think the treasurer is right. I don't want us to be have nine contracts per facility and different machines and all that before us. But I would like to have the initial stocking of each facility have a vote, so that we can oversee the MBE and the cost.
Are there any? Sheila, I need to ask a question. Again, this is kind of new, considering bringing a stress.
Okay. I'm sorry. Can you turn off those bright lights? Okay.
I have examples of, because actually Department of Information Technology is the only department authorized in statute to do these kind of contracts. So you're correct that when you brought the CATS contract, you did not come back with task orders.
Right.
No other agencies subject to the procurement law basically are able to do this. The university system, which is exempt from the procurement law, they do have these kind of contracts, but I have to say that they do say in those contracts, if a particular task order will exceed $500,000, we will bring that task order back to the board. So, but when those is happening, because the way their statute exempting them is happening, but they do, But there's nobody else like you that's within the executive branch that has this legal authority to do these master contracts.
So the dilemma is, technically, I don't know what to bring back. I mean, I'd be happy to come before.
Well, I think what they're talking about is that once you've competed for that, and, I mean, what the forgive me if I'm not restating this, what I understand from what he's suggesting is that once you've competed, you need to have 12,000, you know, 2,000 machines to initially open Penn National. And you compete that, and you say these three manufacturers are who we're going to buy the 2,000 from after getting bids from those nine. And you compete that, and you get the NBE information on those three that he would then come back, that you would come back and get permission to award that task for the initial opening, is what I heard him say, for Penn National. And I do want to point out that you all have not done that. You're correct in talking about your history and your precedent, and that's what the General Assembly said when they set your statute up. But the university system does come back when their task orders are over a certain amount of money.
Right. But at the end of the day, the board's not going to sign.
No, it's going to approve your ability to award those task orders. They're approving your award of it. But the lottery and IT would be awarding it, but they would be approving your authority to award that particular one for the initial opening, is what I heard him say. But I don't know, the governor was talking about just getting reports on it, so I don't know what the sense of the board is. I was just restating the comptroller.
Well, we did the 200, and you're going to come back to it for the first three, for the opening.
For the initial outlay for machines to open the doors and for facilities.
But then with the understanding that that might change once that's been done.
If they needed to modify it because they need 2,200 instead of 2,000, then I think what they're saying is those 200, you wouldn't come back. Your initial opening would come back. If you needed extra on that initial opening, it would be a modification that was...
So, just to make sure I understand, so what we are going to propose is there's going to be a batch machine and associated orders for the initial opening. We're going to come forward to the board. We're going to ask you to give us some permission to do that. We're going to set the ceiling at 200 mil. We agreed that's the proposal. Once, in fact, the board approves the initial opening, then we are going to operate as we have traditionally, with the caveat that we'll come back and report on a full basis.
Correct, for those facilities.
For those facilities.
And then, if there are other facilities, you would give us that initial vote and then have the flexibility afterwards to.
All right, so we need to state it as a motion.
I guess you could probably just say that you moved what Secretary Slanger has stated, because I think you said it's
Secretary
Slanger. I can take it from there.
Articulated, I think, the desire of the board on this, which is the 200, and so the motion is the. Do we have to move to
another? I just moved to approve the item with the conditions.
With the conditions that the secretary just articulated.
Right.
It was all in English.
Yes.
It was the $200 million cap. It was
the initial
order for these come back to the board for approval, and thereafter that there be quarterly reporting.
Okay, that's the third one. Thank you. Yeah. Reports, yes.
So, okay. The motion is sure.
In terms of this item, then, we're obviously not talking about 2010 to 2015. 200 million. Where does the 200 million show up?
I think, it's going to show up at the end of the. I think what happens is that when you get to two, say in 3 years, you got to 200 million and you want some more, you would have to come back in the life of the contract because you'd only been approved for 200 million.
Correct. We would have
years.
To come back for additional money
right.
as other facilities are still available.
And you did do that one time before when the governor and the comptroller were new in office. And there was, I can't remember, the budget was cut, so to speak, on an item.
Okay. Matters.
The treasurer moves approval of the DO-IT agenda items. Assuming there are any questions on that. Are there any?
There was one other.
Any questions on that one?
No.
Okay. Treasurer moves approval. With the aforementioned caveat, seconded by the controller, all in favor, signal by saying aye. Aye. All opposed. The ayes have it. Does that conclude our agenda? That concludes our agenda.
Thank you.
Thank you all very much.
Go plant a tree.
Yes, it will do it. It's fine. Actually, I mean, that's...